Welcome to this episode of the Joe Home Buyer Success Profiles podcast. Today, we're privileged to talk with Terry Sweat of Richmond, Virginia, who joined the Joe Home Buyer franchise in May of 2022 and came to training in June of 2022. It's an absolute honor for us to have him on the podcast today. So, Terry, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Looking forward to it.
Well, tell us about your background. What kind of things did you do before you decided to join the Joe Home Buyer franchise?
Yeah, sure thing. So I graduated college in 1986. And I went to work for a company, and I worked for them for 35 years as a regional cooperative, agricultural cooperative, went up, you know, through the ranks as far as, you know, location manager, district manager, regional director. I did some other jobs in there too, but took an early retirement last year and decided I wanted to do something different.
So did you investigate other franchises besides Joe Home Buyer, or what was it about Joe Home Buyer that drew you to it?
Yeah, sure did. I actually had a franchise broker who I worked with and trying to get down to some of the things that I like and enjoy doing, meeting people, mentoring, getting out, that kind of thing. And he had narrowed it down to about three different franchises, one of which I just didn't have any interest in whatsoever, even though I did interview with the franchisor. But I did narrow it down to two that was really, really close. Joe Home Buyer was one, and totally unrelated was a recruiting firm that recruited for the hospitality industry, restaurant managers, hotel managers, chefs, sometimes something like that, some executive type search things. And really thought that was the one I wanted, to be honest with you. That's how close it was. And then I flew out for Discovery Day, my wife and I did, to Utah, and had a conversation with Mark there at that time.
So had you had any background at all in wholesaling or real estate investing when you joined the franchise?
I made a joke early on with Mark and those guys that I said, I've been buying and selling houses for 35 years. I've bought four and sold three. So that's the homes I've lived in. So they absolutely not. No experience whatsoever with real estate or wholesaling.
What do you think it ultimately was that made you decide that Joe Home Buyer was what you wanted to choose? What was it about that Discovery Day or meeting Mark that made you decide, hey, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, you know, so the reason we went out there, and I drove up to Annapolis, Maryland to meet the owner of the other franchise. And so I was going to do the same thing. Didn't know there was a Discovery Day or what that was about until I got in some conversations. But I said, hey, listen, if I'm going to do business with you guys, I'm going to come out and meet you and talk to you face to face. And sure enough, they already had it set up for a Discovery Day. So once we got there, I really was hoping they would just make me less interested. And then I'd go ahead and pick the other one that I liked a lot. And all it did was confuse me even more. And they did a good job in presenting what Joe stood for. And Mark and Cody both, we went out to dinner one night, and then we had a couple of days there, of course, together. And like I said, when I got home, I was even more confused. Mark called me about two or three days later, and man, he just added some pointed questions, you know, what's it going to take? What do you need to know? You know, that kind of thing. And we talked for about an hour, I think. And I got off the phone. I told my wife, I said, I think this is the one. So that's what turned it around, I guess. It was actually probably 60-40 the other, but I just enjoyed the conversation and someone that, you know, I wanted to work with and deal with. No different than the first franchisee, but there was just something else, or franchisor. There was just something else there that, you know, drew me, you know, a little closer to Joe.
Well, since you didn't really have much of a background in this, I'm sure that was quite a leap of faith there for you to just say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, even after you had an extensive background in other things. Tell us about that start. What was that like for you as far as coming to training and getting started? Once you made that decision to move forward, what was that whole process like for you?
Yeah, it was, as the old saying goes, it was like drinking water from a fire hose, and it still is today. But not that it's unusual, but I'm learning something new almost every day. And it was just trying to get a grasp, number one, on what the wholesaling business, you know, is about and how it works. I never heard of that before. But trying to really just gather all the information I can, read everything I can, be involved in everything I can, started being involved with, you know, some of the Zoom calls and Zoom meetings, just listening and learning and just slowly and gradually, you know, grasping some of the thoughts and ideas and how this business works. And then also look at the future of, you know, how I can expand it, obviously, just before, you know, just besides wholesaling.
Okay. Well, when you came out for the training, is there anything specifically that kind of stands out to you from that 4-day training when you came out initially? Or you could even talk briefly about the 20 hours of virtual training you went through as well. Just talk about maybe something you learned from that that's been helpful for you as you started to grow your business.
Yeah. So the prep work before I got there was valuable. I mean, it just kept getting me, you know, more in depth and more in depth. I think the training itself, again, drinking from a fire hose. I mean, it was listening and learning and getting, it's kind of like going to college. I always said going to college, tell my, I got four daughters now, I went to school and I told them all, so it's like, it's teaching you how to learn and not necessarily specifics. And that's what I did. You know, I, as far as the contacts, people to call and with all the questions I have, and then just getting a good general knowledge, the training itself, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5s was, you know, they were invaluable. I always thought I was a great negotiator. I come from a background of my family in the used car business and insurance sales. So, you know, I always thought I was really good, but the process that I learned is different. And it's like, I always thought Split the Difference was good. But after I read the book of Chris Voss's book about Never Split the Difference, I mean, it makes a big difference. So I think that training period was just, it's invaluable. I look back on it all the time and my notes I've made from there to go back and say, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Hmm. Well, tell us about, once you turned on your marketing, maybe you could just talk about that process a little bit, meeting with Janet and her team and talking about getting your marketing set up. You hadn't really had a bunch of a background, I'm sure, in kind of setting up your own marketing, but what was that experience like? And then how long do you think it took you to get your first deal after you turned your marketing on?
Yeah, so that was exciting. I knew nothing about it. It was generally all Facebook and Google. I had not hired a driver for, you know, driving for dollars or anything like that. So it was 100% web. One thing that sticks out the most is the first lead I actually got. We started on July the 5th. That was when marketing started. I got that first lead and I was just terribly excited about it. Of course, it was a day or two, I think, after. And, you know, the funny thing is that lead is still a lead for me today because it was a military family that is based here close to Richmond at Fort Lee. And I just contacted him I think I had it wrote down like the 1st of January. I sent a text in. I said, hey, just checking in on you. See how's it going? Is anything imminent? And they said, yeah, we're moving in July. We're going to sell this place in April. He said, I was going to call you first. So I remember that one specifically. I think the first deal we got done, I want to say in September, it was small. I mean, it was real small and I was happy to get it, you know, because it was just my first one, you know, and you always remember that first one. It was a little 3-bedroom brick rancher. It had no floors in it. It had no walls in it. It was just studs and joists. And we got it done and I was happy about that one. And I think it was September. So it was a little while before we got that first one, you know, crushed and finished. So, but it was pretty exciting for sure.
Sure. Well, it took you a couple months to kind of get things ramped up. Obviously, with marketing, you have to put effort into it, and it does generate leads, and you generate a lead pretty quickly right after you started that is going to turn into a deal for you. But talk about that process about putting money into marketing and having the faith that, hey, this is going to work out. Because I think some people, when they start a business or start this business in particular, they're putting up a lot of money up front for marketing. It's not like you have inventory or have those kinds of things when you start this business because you can run it out of your home. But it is a big investment you're making there. So what was that experience like for you to put that money out there? And obviously you start to see some response, but then you get your first deal and then you get your second deal. And what was that experience like for you just kind of getting that start, that whole process started?
Well, you got to have faith. You know, you got to have faith in Joe, and you got to have faith in your marketing system and how it's working for you. I mean, you can't do it. You'll be worried about every spend that you make. And that starts building. All that marketing is still building today. The first, you know, Joe Homebuyer Greater Richmond, add that one out at Google and Facebook. They're still working today because people, you know, we're building that name brand, you know, out here. So it's something that I know you just got to have faith in. You got to keep spending. It doesn't, you know, stop. You know, you stop and the leads stop. And now one thing we did do, and Janet and I had talked about it back in the early fall, man, our leads were really going down. They weren't very active. And so we made a quick pivot and we really cut back on web a lot, almost entirely, still kept a little bit of Facebook, but I'd hired a driver by then. And we just started doing all direct mail, everything we were doing except for just a little bit of Facebook. And it just, I don't know what happened. It just exploded. Direct mail worked great. That was probably, I think, November. That was my biggest lead month. We hit it all. I think we put out about 8,000 pieces of direct mail. And it went really well. I was excited that we started getting those leads again. Now I started getting more leads that says, you know, take me off your list, but that's all part of it, you know, whatever that may be. But I also started getting leads that I got appointments on and started getting another deal. And so, you know, it was something that you gotta be aware. My Facebook leads are starting to come back in pretty good. And I've been talking with Bateman, and I may probably increase my Facebook spend a little bit more, but the direct mail, we just pivoted. You know, Janet just recommended that let's get this thing going in a different direction. So, you know, it's going to pivot again, and we'll follow whatever that may bring. So that's how it was just knowing that I get the expertise that I need from whether it's Bateman or whether it's Janet or Mark or whoever it may be. I can always depend on, hey, they knew it wasn't working correctly. I knew it wasn't. So we didn't wait for 3 more months. We did it then, right then, right. That month.
I love that, because I think that's so important. And that's the value of having a franchise system too, that support, right? That you, when you see, hey, this isn't working exactly the way I thought, and every area is a little bit different across the country, can pivot and make those changes. And having that feedback from all the other franchisees too, and Janet and her team, to be able to say, yeah, this is what you need to be doing now, it helps you make those pivots. You start getting the leads in the right direction. So I really like that you shared that comment, because it is so important to stay on top of that. I think sometimes people, you know, business and marketing in particular can be a flowing, ebbing thing. There's some things that work well at certain seasons of the year. Other things work different at different times of the year. Sometimes it's different shifts in the marketplace that are happening. And obviously right now, there's been a pretty big shift to the market with real estate, with interest rates going up and things like that too, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I really appreciate your perspective on that, because it does help to identify. You just have to be consistent at it and be thoughtful and be observant, and then listen to the advice you're given and just pivot and do those things. And you'll see the success you're looking for. So I love that statement. That's awesome.
Good deal.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that you made when you first got started? And what did you learn from that so other people don't have to repeat it?
Probably just the expectation. One of the things Mark told me in that conversation, he called me like 3 days after we were out at Salt Lake. And he said, you know, this is hard work, and it's real hard work. And that didn't bother me at all. Whatsoever. I grew up in a management, you know, retail management type system, and, you know, 50, 60 hour work weeks is normal for me, but it wasn't the hours. It was just the diligence that you have to stay with. And I wasn't sure about that. I was filling it all out about what all needed to be done. Again, physically, I mean, sure, there's some getting out and stuff, but you just got to be diligent, and it is hard work. You got to keep working. There's so many people in Richmond that does what we do, and just no different than any other market out there, you know, I'm sure. But you've got to be at the top. You've got to do all the little things that makes a difference. And I wasn't doing that, not well. I wasn't going to RIA meetings, and brings up a little funny story. So I decided to go to my first RIA meeting. My wife and I went and met some good, you know, got some good people that we met, and a couple of young guys were there, and they said, hey, we just started, and you know, we just bought a property, and we don't have any buyers. I said, man, I got plenty of buyers. I said, I got like almost 2,000, and, you know, here in the last couple of months. And so we've got a good, make a long story short, we put together a JV with those two young fellas. Their first house they ever bought, they had a home run, they bought it great. We split that JV. So the thing that I didn't do was get out and start even doing the RIA meetings, and just little things like that, you've got to really work hard at. It's hard, hard work, but, you know, it's going to show up. And that was a perfect example. And I've got a relationship with those two young fellows, and they call me all the time about properties and want to know if I'd be interested in this one, if they bought it, or that one, if they bought it. I don't tell them all the secrets, but, you know, I'm helping them out. We're building a good relationship. So just staying diligent, understanding it's hard, hard work. It's not going to happen easy. And we all know nothing good is easy. So you've got to work hard at it. And I was hoping it was going to be probably easier than what it was. So that was my first mistake, just probably not understanding what it's going to take to get it done.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned a really important point too about following the steps that Joe Homebuyer teaches and doing the networking, doing all the little pieces and following the steps that they lay out and teach for you. But also just how important it is to build that cash buyers list right away too. You talked about that briefly, that you had how many people do you think you have in your cash buyers list now? I mean, I don't know how recent ago that experience was that you had there at the RIA meeting, but how big do you think your cash buyers list is now?
Yeah, that wasn't that long ago when we did that. I have a fellow franchisee here in the Richmond area, and we share a VA and gather that. I also hired a separate VA on my own. I wanted to build it quicker and faster, and kept that person for 3 or 4 months. Two or 3 months, I guess. And then actually my admin said, listen, I can do all this as part of what I do as well. And she said, I'd be glad to. She said, I love getting on Facebook and doing it, you know, the Joe way. You don't have to worry about it. Trustworthy and, you know, that kind of thing. So she really got onto it really fast. Which my admin is one of my four daughters that is a stay-at-home mom, and she's working about 20, 25 hours a week, working with all my systems and does all my email blasts, the kind of things that I don't care to do. So I would say we're a little over 2,000 now, I think, still. But every time I tell that to someone around here, they're amazed. I said, well, no, I want 6,000 or 8,000. I'm not finished. We're still doing this every day. We got 40 put in this week. So it's something you got to just stay diligent at. You got to keep working, because the more you have, the more opportunity you're going to have to move a property.
Right. You just create more of that urgency around it with the auction format that Joe Homebuyer teaches as well. So I really appreciate you sharing that, because I mean, it is important that you put that time in and effort, and that consistently adds up. I mean, 40 here, 30 there, that adds up to build a pretty robust buyer's list too. So just following the steps that they teach and then doing those things. And then that makes a big difference too, because a lot of people that are doing wholesaling have no idea how to do that part of it. They can maybe get a property under contract, but they don't know what to do next. And so finding those JV opportunities is a great way to get your business started as well. So appreciate sharing that story. That's great. You know, it sounds like you're primarily doing most of your business as wholesaling. Is that right? Have you done any fix and flips at all, or is it primarily just been wholesaling up to this point?
No, just wholesaling. We're just building our portfolio right now with the funds that we have, and not really ready to do any flips or even any buy and holds. I think the buy and holds are going to come probably first, you know, as I learn. You know, contractors, those type people in the area, I meet them all the time. You know, they're coming in looking at, you know, at appointments. I'm meeting them and making some relationships with those people. Then down the road, hopefully, you know, when I get ready to do some rehabs, I've got some better contacts and understanding and that knows the business and what I can, you know, someone I can trust, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, let's talk about a couple of experiences that you've had since with buyers and sellers. You already shared one great story there. But when you think back on the experiences you've had with helping people get out of properties, maybe share an experience or two with sellers. And when you sat down with them, why they chose to go with you as opposed to other wholesalers, or what stuck out to them. And then specifically, when maybe they wrote a review, or maybe they said something to you after you sold the house for them, they shared about the experience they had with you.
I don't know what it is. You can tell by my language. My original home is in Tennessee, so I've got that Southern drawl there, and I try not to talk too fast. And I don't know, there's an attachment there that I guess I just show concern for the situation, you know, that some of these sellers are in. Not all of them are in, you know, bad situations, but a lot of them are. And you just, I show concern for them, you know, just as a person, and try to understand where and how we can help. And that seems to be something that, I mean, they're calling all kinds of people that do what I do, sell fast, get cash for your home. They're not, you know, they're looking up those same, you know, they're Googling who can buy my property for cash. But there's a difference there that I think some of these folks see that says, this is the person I want to do business with. And that's what we're trying to achieve. You know, that's obviously, we're trying to achieve a rapport with those folks over the phone first, to get out there and let them know that you're just not the same old person that's, you know, doing check the box. And then when you get out there, you know, one of the things I have to fight myself, because I'm one of those persons that, man, let's go, I'm ready to go kind of thing. And I have to fight it, because I want to get out there and I want to listen a little bit more. I want to pay more attention to what their needs are. And then, of course, you discover so much stuff when you do that. If you spend an hour or so out there talking with the family, the owner, before you even think about buying a house or even going and looking through the rooms, I really have to. Some of them are ready to go as soon as I get there, and that's like, I just want to sit down and talk a minute. So there's something about that I did learn, you know, from Joe. There's no question that rapport, that understanding what they need, it helps them. And it helps us as well to understand how we can help them the best and make it profitable for both sides of the deal.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think it is such a servant mindset that you go in there and seek to help them and figure out a creative way to come up with a solution that works for them. And I think that really speaks to people too, like you said. They see the difference there than other just, hey, I want to look at the property and see how much money I can make on this deal. It's about, you're really focused on their needs. And it's not always about the price, as you mentioned. Sometimes you get to know them and their situation, you can work out something that makes sense for them, and you're able to negotiate a good deal. But they're happy with it, and then you're able to help the new buyer have a successful outcome with what they're trying to do as well. So there's both parts of that too that are really important. And I really appreciate you identifying and talking about that.
Yeah.
Any other stories or experiences that kind of stand out to you of things that happened when you were sat down with a seller or something that said after you sold the house that really stuck with you that gives you a lot of confidence going forward as you go meet with other additional sellers?
You know, one of my most interesting stories probably is not from a seller side, it's from a buyer side. And it's no different. You've just got to, I remember Mark and Janet telling me, hey, listen, some of these buyers, especially they're going to convince you that you need to do it their way. And you just got to stick by your guns and say, no, this is the way we do it. So I had a buyer, made a good offer. It was a nice offer. And I agreed, but I just never could get him to follow up afterwards. I couldn't get the earnest money in. I couldn't get some documents signed. He was just slow. And I finally got, I was using his attorney, which are very great people in a city, you know, it's a couple hours from here. So it was not just like it was somewhere close by, but this buyer was just, man, I just couldn't, you know, well, this is the way I do it. And I finally just had to say, listen, here's the deal, man. I'm out on this thing. I'm going to the next person. If you don't want to close on this thing. And so after another day, I just said, no, I'm done. So I went to the next, this person hadn't even made an offer. It came in late and I said, I'm sorry, it's already, you know, under contract with another buyer. And they said, well, if anything happens, you know, call me back. Well, they did. And I said, we got them in the house, let them look at it. And they made an offer that was $9,000 more than the original offer that I had. Well, that person had already null and voided our contract just for not getting the earnest money in. But it was just interesting that you got to really be diligent on both ends. It's not just with the sellers, but the buyers too. I mean, although it worked out in the end, you know, I thought it was going down south. It was a nice assignment fee to begin with, and it was going down pretty quick. And then all of a sudden at the end, you know, it came out really well. That one closed out well and easy, like in the next 24 hours. So it worked out well.
Yeah, I think that's, like you said there, just getting understanding both perspectives. And I think a really important thing today too is interviewing your cash buyers on your list and understanding what they're looking for too, so that you can provide that to them. And if you understand their needs, what they're looking for, their requirements, when you're able to sit down with the sellers, you can kind of structure a deal specifically for what they're looking for. And that makes a big difference from the cash buyer's perspective of, yes, this deal is very attractive for me, I really want to buy this one and do repeat deals with you as well. So I think that's really important consideration. Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, how long have you lived in the Richmond area? Have you lived there for a while then? Because I don't know if you've had relationships with other realtors or other investors. It sounds like you kind of started a lot of that process from scratch. So I'd love to have you share kind of your story about how you built that list or how you worked with other realtors, other brokers, other people that kind of helped you kind of scale, start growing your business now.
Yeah, sure. So obviously, you know, it never ends. It's an ever-building type relationship, which the only realtor, you know, I knew it was a realtor that we bought this house from that I live in, that we bought in 2008. So no relationships other than maybe someone at church or, you know, something like that, that I knew that, you know, they were a realtor. But you have to, you know, have relationships with those type, you know, entities, whatever that may be. And I'm just really now starting to get some relationships built with especially realtors, because I think, and every time I talk with one, they both see the need. You know, in the last year, how much this whole industry has changed. It's not as easy for them anymore either. And so they're looking for creative ways to be involved with a wholesaler like myself, and the same, you know, with me back. So once we, you know, it started, you know, the first realtor I talked to probably in August of last year, they saw a property. We had posted it on a Facebook group. We posted on about 100 Facebook groups when I get a property, but you know, you just start building those, and some's going to work out just fine. Some's going to say, you know, I don't know how we're going to work it out. But then there's others that say, yeah, here's how you can help me. How can I help you? So we start asking questions like that, and we find out there is opportunity to help each other. So that's been a very, very good, and just buyers in general. So as we start blasting out properties and you start seeing consistent buyers, the ones that are looking for specific, you know, type of homes or properties, and then you start segmenting them. And I've started some of that actually, like this person likes to buy properties out in the country. You know, you don't find many like that, but once you find them, man, as soon as you get a property out in the country and you're going to blast it out, you're going to call them. You're going to, you know, text them, say, hey, did you see my property out in so-and-so county or something like that? So you start learning, you know, those type things, or this person really loves three bedroom, you know, ranchers. And so the segmenting those people and building those relationships, the trustworthiness is invaluable. I mean, if you trust them and they trust you and your system, because there's, hey, listen, there's a lot of dark shades of issues with this industry in some areas, and they've been burnt on some of those people. And I had a lady that we worked with on the last property I had. She did not get the property. She was her offer was just under, but she said, "I'm so glad we met, because it's nice to find somebody that I think I can trust in the way they do business, and they're not just looking to get earnest money and run and, you know, that kind of thing." So
sure.
So that kind of thing is good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that, because it is important to build those relationships over time. And they may not get the first deal with you, but they get interested. They see how you work. They see, man, this guy keeps bringing more and more deals to the market all the time. This is definitely a mover and a shaker that I want to work with. Can you talk about that briefly, about, I mean, how that ability of you to work with sellers has expanded as you've, and I know you're still building this now, but I'm just curious about your perspective of how you've been working with sellers and buyers, and particularly on the buyer side, how you decide who you're going to work with and how that works, and what their experience has been like for you overall since you started the franchise.
Yeah, of course, with sellers, I'm not too choosy. I bought a house. I JV with him. We bought a home together. He bought the home for like $11,000. And then I'm talking to people that's got homes. I think I talked to one last week that was looking for a quick move on $920,000 home. So selecting a seller, I'm not terribly choosy on that. And we're going to, you know, as we go through the, you know, the whole process of getting an agreement signed, that you're going to find out, you know, soon enough, whether this is somebody that's not really, you know, not real. But buyers, one of the things that a lot of buyers want to show me proof of insurance. Now, this is just me personally, and some of the things I've known and read and learned through Joe, and not everybody does it the same, but I mean, not proof of insurance, but proof of funds. And it just doesn't matter to me. I think the $5,000 EMD that we require once they decide, you know, they're the high offer, it eliminates everyone. I've had a couple of people that, you know, was the high offer and then never heard from them again. So again, guess what? We don't deal with those people anymore, but they understand that this is a real deal. It goes to my title company. It doesn't come to me. And so I think as we go through, more and more buyers understand that it's just real. There's just so many out there that watched a YouTube on wholesaling and they think they got it all figured out, and they really don't have anything figured out. You know, they didn't go through a process of learning how this works in totality. So, you know, it's just the way it works with me, you know, is the way I try to build this with, especially with buyers right now.
Yeah. And I think what you said is so important too, because it's not just getting the contract. It's the entire system that Joe teaches you that helps you have the disposition process or move the properties, even after you get them under contract, which, because if you only get the contract, that doesn't help the seller very much. They're only going to be helped if you actually help close the deal and find the actual cash buyer. So really you important bet. Perspective there for what you said there for sure. I want to talk about training really quick here about your experiences. Now, obviously, Joe Homebuyer does multiple trainings every week. They have an opportunity for you to get on acquisition trainings and disposition trainings. They have, right now, they're doing a leadership training class. They just recently did the seller financing course. Just talk about those courses a little bit and those opportunities to get on Zoom meetings with groups, with other franchisees at the same level as you, and how that's been helpful to you to get your business expanded and growing.
Again, I keep using this word invaluable, because it just really is. And I do. I'm a one person, you know, I own the business. I'm the owner. I'm the acquisition manager. I have my admin that helps me. I have a driver, and I have a cold caller. So, and they work about 10 hours a week. So it's all me, and I'm trying to learn, you know, everything and absorb everything I can. And I try to get on every possible call I can get on. Obviously I can't get on all of them, but training about seller financing that we had for however many weeks that was, I had no clue about any of that. And I think it was just something that I wanted to learn about. And I did. It got really technical really quick after about the second or third one, but I just moved up a big jump by just learning that. So it's no different than any other training, you know, that we may, you know, I may be trying to encounter, and you know, and it helps me understand So I'm reading a book right now about probate and pre-probate and how to use all that. I mean, I'm gonna suggest to Mark and Janet, hey, we need to do the same thing on how to work with probate and pre-probate and stuff like that, because it's just another avenue that I need to learn about. There may be lots of people that understands it, you know, completely, which I doubt. It's a pretty complicated process, but you know, just being able to see what we've done so far, this is just another idea that I like to throw out to them, you know, that we can do. But man, the training is there. It's if you want it, it's there. And if you decide that you don't want to, you know, get on an acquisition, I get on acquisition calls just to listen to other people's issues and concerns, disposition calls, same thing. Just to listen. I try not, you know, to, I don't have anything every time, but if I've got an opening, I'm going to get on that call and I'm going to learn by what somebody else asked, whether it's Dave Nibley or Blake. You know, I learned so much just absorbing as much of that as I can, being on those training calls or I guess just question calls.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really great too, because I mean, some of those things you may not have even considered before, and you're learning that from real deals that other people are doing, and that helps you when that situation comes up for you, that you already know what to do because you've heard about it, you've dealt with that, or you've seen how someone successfully completed a deal like that. That's invaluable, as you mentioned. So I really appreciate sharing that. Now, also, do you have the mastermind groups too? You have the Rookies to Rockstars group, the Ascending Joes group, and the Top Performers group. Talk about those meetings a little bit. Those are done to be able to help people at the same level, so everybody's learning how to get their first deal. And as you start progressing, start hiring more people, what to do there in those situations. Can you talk about those training calls at all and how that's been valuable to you?
Yeah, so I'm on the Rookie Joe call still, of course. And, you know, Mark and I guess decides, or Janet or someone decides when we need to move on up, you know, to the next one. And so I get on that one every opportunity I can. I mean, unless I've got an appointment or, you know, you know, working through something that I just can't get on those things. It's a lot of first time buy. I'm on the end of, you know, so I've been in for 6 months now. And so one of the first things I do, especially we've got a great new group of Joes that have come on in the last 3 or 4 months. And so I throw my phone number out there and say, hey, listen, man, I ask all these dumb questions. Don't be afraid to call me. And I'll throw my phone number out there, my personal phone number, and say, call me. And they do. You know, these are new Joes that says, I don't understand this part, but they don't want to ask, you know, Mark, or they don't want to ask Janet, or they need to know like today. So that's where the Rookie call. I did the same thing when I first came on. I called, you know, two or three people that I had learned, Steve Scobie and Ryan Johnson and Will Turney and some of those guys that I'll call and say, hey, man, you got a month on me. David Turner is my fellow franchisee here in Richmond. And so I got on the call with them. So I wanted to provide the same, you know, help for anybody that needs it and wants to ask a question. So I'm already doing that with some of the newer ones here in the last few months. So it's been nice trying to return the favor.
Yeah, I love that because it is so valuable to have that support and help. And it's not just a corporate team, but as you mentioned, the franchisees themselves become really good friends. You have a chance to interact with them, get help from them. You can ask them a quick question and they're able to get back to you really quickly and help out with that too. So great comment there for sure.
Yes.
You mentioned you have another franchisee in your market. I think some people investigating a franchise, they always kind of think, I want to have the biggest territory and it's important for me that no one else is there. What has been your experience with that, having another franchisee in your market, and how valuable has that been to have someone else to talk with and work with as you build your cash buyers list and collaborate together?
Yeah. So when I came out for Discovery Day, I found out that there was another fellow who just came in to the same area. And I went like, oh, no. You know, that was like my first reaction. It's like, oh, you know, that's not going to be good. And I didn't know how many wholesalers were, you know, in the Richmond market, but going to find out there's thousands of them. So of all sorts. But so, yeah, we met and talked on the phone early on, tried to, you know, kind of think about how we could share some costs. Matter of fact, he was only on 1 month before I started. So so we're both new, you know, pretty much. And we really had a lot of contact with each other early on, just kind of questioning, in, you know, our own things. And then we did decide to share a VA on getting our cash buyers. And we're still doing that today. We share it. Been doing that for 6 months now, I guess, and still using the same person. We worked with some attorneys together and some title companies together to see which one kind of fit what we thought. So we shared some costs with attorneys that we ended up not using. I found another title company that we use. So, and then just from time to time, there's a conversation that we run into each other, whatever it may be, but it's nothing dramatic, but we know, you know, we're there and We'll talk to each other from time to time. So it was not like I thought it was going to be. We've never run into each other on a deal, which even if we did, you know, I tell him, I said, I'm sorry, but you know, you're going to lose out, man. If you come up against me, and you know, we just joke and cut up, like, you know, but I know other Joes do the same thing in Dallas and Utah, especially. I know it happens. I've heard the stories about it, but you know, it's just another close support. Especially, let's say, hey, listen, I got to go on vacation and I'm going to be away. I can't do it. I can call him and say, hey, listen, I got a lead. You want to split it if you want to go run this one. And, you know, we can do that kind of thing. We've actually never done that, but everybody's got to take off sometime. And you could, I can't turn off the phone and I don't want to turn off the phone. But if I do, I got a little confidence that I've got some help there if I need it.
Yeah. Well, I think that, like you said there, you'll find that other Joe Homebuyer franchisees are not your competition. They're collaborators and work well together. There's a lot of other people out there trying to do wholesaling that just don't have a background or experience there. And those are really the more of your competitors than any Joe Homebuyer franchisee ever would be. So collaborating, working together is so valuable for sure. Well, now that you had a chance to be in the business for a little bit, you've kind of been out there interacting with sellers and kind of seeing some of the competition out there. What do you think it is that sets Joe Homebuyer apart from other wholesalers out there? You mentioned a couple of things like professionalism, I think, and also just really listening to the needs of the sellers. But anything else that kind of sticks out to you as something that really separates Joe Homebuyer from other wholesalers out there?
Well, it's interesting. And I made this comment in one of our calls, and I have no idea what I'm doing since June, but I'm learning every day. But I guess with our website that, you know, people can go on to interested parties or maybe business partners that wants to see what we're about. The ads that we've done on Google, the email blasts are professional that we've learned, you know, how to do from Joe. People think that I've been doing this for 40 years and I am the expert. It just blows my mind that people call and say, what do you think about this? What? And I know they've been in this business way longer than I have. And that's the perception that I think goes out when, you know, any kind of communication that we send out, we try to make it of the utmost importance that it's professional, it's done correctly, it's done actually the Joe way. We don't get out too far on our own and try to do something without asking first, hey, what do you think about this? You know, whoever I may ask, Janet, whoever it may be. But that's the thing that I look back and say, once I found out about Joe, I said, hey, listen, I hear about this Homevestors. I'm going to call them and see what they think. It wasn't the model that was for me by any means. I didn't go and meet anybody, but it just wasn't the one that I thought was going to work for me. But there's just something about it that you put off this persona that you are the professional. And there's some big ones here in the Richmond area. I mean, real big, you know, TV advertisement and all that. But I can do the same thing. It's just a matter of where I want to put my marketing money. And I will do that. But it's a great thought process that people trust and believe in what they see and treat me as if I'm the one. And all what I've learned in 6 months, honestly. And I've learned a lot. And I honestly think I am the best out there. I have to believe that. And then when someone asks me the question, you better believe I'm going to give them an answer. I won't give them an answer that I don't know, but I'll give it to them. And most of the questions I get, I've been taught the answer. So it's been great.
Well, I think that training and that support and that help gives you a tremendous amount of confidence. And as you said, how you're positioned in the market makes you the expert for other investors or sellers to want to come to too. And that makes a big difference. And as you said, even though you haven't had a lot of experience up to this point yet, you're still growing very, very quickly and learning those things and come across as though you have been doing this for a long period of time. I think that really speaks to Joe's training and the support they offer to you and your just willingness to pick that up and go do the work, you know?
Yes, yes, for sure.
Well, let's talk briefly about time commitment. Obviously, you were the primary operator of the business. You were the acquisition manager. You have some driving for dollars and a couple of VAs to help you on the cold calling and helping you with some other things there too. What do you think your hourly commitment to the business is now versus when you started? When do you think you'll be hiring your first acquisition manager? Maybe you could just talk about that from what you kind of see your business becoming the next 6 months or so.
Yeah. So again, being in the business that I came from and actually just I grew up and work ethic and that kind of thing. And always you got to work hard to, you know, to make things work. It's really not as bad as I want to probably make it think it is. When I say bad, I mean in a way of hours that I work, because I was always at work at 7 a.m. and I was usually home by 6. So, you know, I was putting in those 11, 12 hour days all the way through my whole career, even more when I was younger. And I really didn't want to work 70, 80 hours. That was one of the things that I told Mark when I first, I said, I don't want to work 80 hours a week. I did that when I was 30. You know, I don't want to do that anymore. And he said, you don't have to. So I talked to a few franchisees and they were all saying, hey, listen, I don't know. I probably put in 40 hours. Some of them said 30, some of them said 50. And I fall right in there. You know, the big deal is some weeks I may work Saturdays and Sundays and go, you know, whenever I can get, you know, an appointment, I'm going. I don't care what, with exception, I'm not going to miss church. That's just one of the things that we believe in. I'm not going to miss church to go on an appointment. But other than that, you know, I'm pretty wide open. And so it changes, you know, every week. But you know what? Just in general, I'm probably putting in probably 40 hours a week, maybe not even that much, to be honest with you. I'd love to have enough leads to put in more, you know, for right now. So I've really been thinking hard about, you know, hiring an acquisition manager and having the confidence that I'm going to have enough work that they're going to be able to make a living. I'm probably more concerned about that than I am anything. And understanding that even though I think I'm pretty good at what I do, there are people out there that are better than what I am, especially in the acquisition side of it. And I'm getting closer. The more leads that I get every month, that I probably am not investigating to the depth that someone would do a better job than I do. So I'm thinking about that, trying to find that right person. I've found three or four good people that the predictive index come out really good on, but they're all making six figures, $150,000, and they're not going to commit to me on a, you know, on a commission type basis. So, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there, James. It's getting to the point of where I want to enjoy. I'll be 60 in April. And so, you know, I want to be able to, you know, my wife and I, we got a big fifth wheeler. We go camping in the fall. I love taking off a week or two, going hunting. I was in Texas this past winter hunting. And, you know, I was consistently worried about what was going on with the business. So I want to get away from that a little bit and have that turned off to someone else. So I'm really getting close to making a decision that it's time to go ahead and try and get this acquisition manager started and get going. So it's part of just my life and where I'm going. Someone asked me, so when are you really going to retire? And I'm like, man, I don't know. I may not ever retire, you know, as long as this business is going. I may hire a general manager and move away from it a little bit. But that's kind of my thought process going forward. I've got to scale the business up, and I fully understand that, to make it, you know, explode if I get that right person.
Sure. But you're enjoying it too, I think. And that's an important consideration as well. You're putting the time in, you're enjoying that part of it. And as you do hire people, the great thing is Joe Homebuyer can help you train those people and help you scale that up as well, which is exciting too.
No, yeah, for sure. And it's a funny thing. Like, I got, you know, four daughters, I've told you this, and I'm very proud of everything. One's an engineer, one's a VP of sales development, and one's a physical therapist, and one's stay-at-home mom, and she works for me. She's the most valuable to me right now as far as helping me in this job. But I told them, man, you've got to have fun every day you go to work. You got to learn it. You got to enjoy it. And it doesn't mean you're not going to have bad days. Don't get me wrong. I've had my share of disappointments in the last 6 months, deals that didn't go through, or, you know, whatever that may be. But you got to enjoy it and you got to learn. And man, I'm still learning, and I don't think I'll ever quit learning. And I hope I don't, because that's the enjoyment for me, is a completely new thing that is so far away from what I did for 35 years, you know, in the world that I was in. So yeah, it's great. I mean, I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy, as you can tell, I enjoy talking. It doesn't bother me a bit. I like talking to people and meeting new people and all kinds of different circumstances. It kind of what makes me like even more what I do with Joe. And I'll be honest, if I hire an acquisition manager, I understand I'm going to miss out on some of that, but you know, it's which way the scale do you want it to go? But it's a fun job. I shouldn't even say job. It's not, doesn't act like a job to me. I was so used to getting up and at 5 o'clock in the morning and going to work. And now I do whatever I want to. My wife goes to work and, you know, I'm fixing breakfast for both of us. So I'm enjoying that part. It's different, but then when I get on it, you know, I'm on it till that day finishes. And sometimes that's not too early.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, I think that you just shared some great insights about, you know, just the time schedule. And I think for people listening to this, that you can kind of schedule your own time. That's something that's great about Joe too, that you can kind of say, okay, I want to do that a little bit more in the morning, a little bit more in the evening, but you can kind of adapt as you need to with your business too, which gives you a lot of freedom and flexibility. And as you do hire more people out, it's going to give you more opportunities that way as well. So I really appreciate you sharing that perspective. Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking for, you know, as we scale up and do more business. And that's, you know, that's my goal. I'm not much on status quo. You know, I'm always wanting more.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think you like most about being a Joe Homebuyer franchisee? If you were to define that down to one or two things, what is it you like most about this business and being a part of it?
I like the freedom of being an entrepreneur. I like that freedom. I like the thought that I've always worked for someone else my whole career, and I've enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. But the thrill of doing this and saying this is what, you know, I've worked to build along with Joe, of course. I think that's probably just the thing that I've never had a desire to do all these years. And all of a sudden, the desire came, the want, the need came. I wasn't ready to retire. And Joe was the one that fit of all the things that was done. So there's so many things that I could say I like about Joe. I could just add on and add on and add on, but it just come out to be the perfect fit for me. And I wouldn't trade it right now. I wouldn't go back. And, you know, I'll go back so far, and my wife, she gives me the encouragement and says, hey, you know what, but where are you today where you were 30 days ago or 60 days ago? How much more knowledge do you have? How much more opportunities are you getting? And it's just a building process. And of course, this market that we're in has not helped matters, but you know, I have full confidence that the way I see things moving and changing, it's going to just keep building. And when this thing does explode, I'm going to be in better position to handle it, and knowledgeable and experienced and that kind of thing, and going through some of the worst ones. So I'm ready for a few of those easy ones. That's what I'm looking for. Some of those easy ones, but there's not many.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate you saying that, because I think one thing that's great about being in business for yourself and not by yourself, like in the franchise system like Joe Homebuyer has, is you have all that support. If you get stuck, you're not sure what to do, you can call up and get answers. You can get on a leadership training class like what's being taught right now and learn something about a personal development, a skill that you need that's going to help you to train and teach other people how to be better leaders and grow your business. And that support is so helpful when you're getting started with your business. When you start a business on your own, you don't have that support. It makes it difficult for you to get the work done or to grow or scale as fast as you could or get the knowledge you need. And learning those things you're doing is really setting yourself up to be able to, as you're probably already seeing, with the market shifting and changing, there's more need for what we do. More sellers are in situations where they need the support and help that Joe Homebuyer franchisees can offer to them. And that's invaluable as well, to have that support and be able to reach out to those individuals and help them out of those difficult situations.
100% correct. And I think that's the separation clause, is if I can get on a phone with someone and help them understand that I'm not here just to buy their property and make a profit. If I can, right. If I can talk to someone, James, they'll understand it. It's a win-win for both. If it's not a win-win for both sides, then we're probably not going to work out a deal. And I, you know, that's one of the things. It's got to be favorable for you, and it's got to be favorable for me. If it's not, then we're probably not going to work out a deal. You know, if one of the sides can't be favorable. So that's what I start off with. I tell them, I said, it's got to work out for you no matter what. If it doesn't, then we want it to work out best for you first, and then best for me second.
Well, a lot of times I'll ask this question when we finish up these interviews, is if you had to make this choice over again, would you choose to get back into the Joe Homebuyer franchise again?
Yeah, there's no question, no doubt. I jump on that one pretty quick. I mean, I've got a lot of commitment in this, you know, financially and time. And you know, like I said, there's been some lean moments, makes you question, you know, we're doing the right thing here. But man, I don't know what I would have done any different after I've met the group of Joes, and when I say the group, I mean, you know, Mark and Cody and Janet, and understanding what their thought process is and how they run their business. I just don't see myself doing anything. I mean, that other job that we talked about, or that other business that we talked about earlier, I probably would have been okay with that. But what it was so much time just on the phone, and that just wasn't me. I love getting out, and so I'm getting a little bit. I love meeting people. I love getting out, working outside, and I love mentoring people. And I did that my whole career with where I was at. And, you know, the mentoring people is not there, because I'm still learning so much. It's going to be hard for me to mentor. I know we do a lot of leadership classes, and honestly, I did those for 35 years as I grew with the old company that I had. But there's always something new you can learn. There's always something different. It's not the same every single time, unless you actually go through the same course twice or something, and then you'll still pull and pick things out. So the Joe system was the right one for me. Someone asked me one time, what made you choose to get into real estate? And I said, you know, it's funny. I didn't choose to get into real estate. I chose to get in with Joe. Hmm.
I like that a lot. Well, you said also too something really important as well, that the support you get and the help, and you like getting out and doing other things too. You don't have to just do wholesaling. Eventually you get into fixing and flipping properties and renting out properties. And there's so many other opportunities that are exciting about what the business can do too as you continue to grow and expand it. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share your perspective and your experiences with us here today. Do you have any final advice you want to offer to people that are listening to and investing in the franchise about, but they're making this decision or thinking about, should I join the Joe Homebuyer franchise? What advice would you give to them about making that decision?
So the things that I did early on trying to make a decision was I had to know the people that I was going to work with. I had to know the owners. I had to know who I could trust. And that was I'm telling you, the other person, the other franchise that I looked at, I trusted that person. I went and visited that person in Annapolis, Maryland, and I really did. And so I couldn't say that I didn't trust that one, but it made a big difference to me when I know I'm making a financial decision with a lot of dollars that I needed to get started in this business. I had to have that trust, and I got that with these folks. And that was the determining factor. I mean, at the end of the day, I trusted who I was working with and dealing with. And, you know, that was the pivot point that said, all right, here's the company you're going to work with.
Well, thanks again for taking the time, Charity, to talk with me today. I really appreciate your perspective and your experiences here with us a little bit. Appreciate taking time out of your day to chat with me and share your experiences with us here. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun. And it helped me kind of, you know, fall back and retrospect on some of the things that we talked about today. And it's helped me. It'll help me as well. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Disclaimer. As with any business, your results may vary. And will be based on your individual capacity, business experience, expertise, and level of desire. There are no guarantees concerning the level of success you may experience in this or any franchise. Each individual's success depends on his or her own background, dedication, desire, and motivation. The information presented in this podcast episode that you just listened to is intended to be for your educational and informational purposes only. We are not presenting you with a business opportunity. We are not making any claims as to income that you may earn. Before embarking on any endeavor, please use caution and seek the advice of your own personal professional advisors, including your attorney and accountant. Where income figures are mentioned, if any, those income figures are anecdotal information passed on to us concerning the results achieved by the individual sharing the information. We have performed no independent verification of the statements made by those individuals. Please do not assume that you will make those same income figures. Success in any endeavor is based upon many factors individual to you. We do not know your educational background, your skills, your prior experience, or the time you can and will devote to the endeavor. Please perform your own due diligence before embarking on any course of action. Remember, there are risks in any endeavor that are not suitable for everyone. Please understand that past performance cannot be an indication of possible future results. Any and all forward-looking statements that are presented by franchisees in these podcast episodes are intended to express their opinion of earnings potential. Again, please perform your own due diligence before embarking on any course of action. Follow the advice of your personal qualified advisors. Thank you again for taking the time to listen to this podcast episode, and we hope you've enjoyed this conversation.